All right. Common Sense Ohio. Is Trump on drugs or is he just taking over the drug trade here in our country? Every rose has its thorn, at least in baseball. And non compos mentis. Who would have thought Biden was incompetent after all? Just ask Tapper.
Just there's corn pop.
All right. Common Sense Ohio coming at you 5-14-25. This is commonsenseohioshow.com, where you can submit a question, check out a topic, become a guest if that's what you want. Brought to you by Harper Plus. Let's run Harper's ad just one more time.
Yeah.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I? Instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
Anyway, this day in history brought to you by Harper Plus. Always an interesting exploration in history, because guess what? You can almost always find something that we should have learned from years ago, or at least relate to years ago.
For sure.
But before that, the end was near in 1997, or at least it was the end for Frank Sinatra. He died this day in history, 1997.
Wow.
Did it his way, of course, all the way through.
Yeah.
I just couldn't resist that one. But the one I wanted to really talk about was on May 14th, 1607, Jamestown settlers arrive. And why do we care about that? Well, you know, this is a country built on immigration. Immigration seems to be a fairly hot topic these days. And it's all started back, turns out, in May 14th, 1607. Great history there involving Pocahontas, Indian wars, freezing winters, almost giving up. Coming back with supplies, sucking it up, and toughing it out, and here we have a country, you know what, 400 years.
And I'm sure from the Indian point of view, the Powhatans or whatever they were called,
that was the chief, and then Pocahontas was his daughter.
There you go.
Who was hooking up with John Smith, as it turns out, I think.
I think they viewed these Englishmen
like, hey, you want to hang out tonight?
Yeah. They were the original illegal immigrants, I think. They probably said, you know, where's your green card?
So anyway, that happened, and there's great history there, and I think it's often overlooked. You know, we sometimes don't pay attention to that. But what was, you know, I'm trying to relate two things that are probably not exactly relatable, but we do. This country was, in many ways, built on immigration. We immigrated here, and we built a country, and you know, there's been all sorts of sordid history about this, with the Irish coming in and the Germans coming in and being discriminated against, even despite their white skin. I mean, like really discriminated against. The Jews really discriminated against. Go watch. I mean, there's movies about it, etc.
Oh, yeah.
But
the
Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
The Gangs of New York.
Yeah. Five Points in New York.
5 Points. Yeah. So, you know, people don't realize how, at least study that history. Like, we created different areas where Irish would live, Italians would live,
Chinese,
Germans would live,
Chinatowns.
Yeah. Right here in Columbus, Ohio, we have German Village. They came and built a bunch of breweries and built bricks and made bricks, I think.
And then World War One came along and they all skedaddled out of German Village because there were pogroms against German citizens, ethnic German citizens during World War One. They were viewed as,
how could that be, Norm? They were white.
A lot of this has nothing to do with skin color, but like you say, people forget history. They really don't know the lessons of history.
And this isn't to detract from discrimination that has occurred for those who aren't white. Certainly it has happened, but and maybe even more so. But it's happened to everybody. And what's interesting is we always had this the history of our immigration was built upon what does the country need at the time.
Right.
And it was, I don't think it was intentionally designed to make people assimilate, but it just happened, because it wasn't like you could come to this country back in the time of the potato famine and get welfare.
No.
Right.
You didn't come and just sign up for health care, welfare, and money.
All you got
free
was
housing.
An opportunity. That's
you,
all you
got.
You
to
got.
Come here and you landed on the boat with 2 feet on the ground, or you got off the boat with 2 feet on the ground and said, okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe got a rifle stuck in your hand to go fight the Civil War at that.
Right. Because you know, that paid money.
That paid money. Right.
Yeah.
You know.
So so people, I think that forced a little bit of assimilation because you had to.
You had to. Right.
You know, and I didn't grow up in a house. I was not first generation immigrants, but I know people who were. And,
yeah. You
know, they weren't allowed to speak anything other than English in their household. And they, you know, their parents quickly assimilated. And that was the idea. So.
Right. Well, when their kids went to school, they didn't have a teacher speaking Somali and Lebanese and Persian and French and every other kind of language. So you had to assimilate. And you would even want to pass. I know, like in California, many of the second generation Mexican children don't speak Spanish. Like they can't even, right. If they go back to Mexico, they can't talk to their relatives. Right. And it's because they want to blend in.
And it would have been frowned upon, right?
Well, they want to blend in with their friends, with their associates at school, with people who want to hire them. And they realize right away that the easiest way to do commerce in America is if we all have a common base of language and hopefully ethics.
And culture.
And culture.
Right, right. So that so this is, it's not color, but culture.
That's right.
And this is what.
You know, it's funny about that, though. So we'll go to high school and learn Spanish as a second language.
Yeah.
Where right, their generation right. lost it.
Lost it, right.
That's right.
It's so bass-ackwards if you think about it, because you do want that second and third generation to still have their, I don't want to call it, I guess, call it a native tongue, their ancestral
tongue.
Look,
it's a link to their culture.
Because it's great, exactly.
But their culture was not that much different than ours to begin with, and that's what that's what is.
That's right.
That's what's important.
As opposed to some of the immigrants we're getting now, which are truly alien cultures.
We saw, was it down in Texas, the Muslims wanted their own city. Basically,
yeah.
They wanted their own government, their own city, their own place. They wanted to carve out a country within our country.
Their own court system, Sharia courts.
Their own Sharia law. And fortunately, knock on wood, that didn't happen. And it was struck down or denied by whoever denies things down in Texas.
Yeah.
But it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah.
And that's how you lose a country. Just ask the Romans. You know, right. that's how you lose it. When you give up the culture, you lose the country. So
there are apparently Chinese police stations in places like New York City, where students, let's say Chinese mainland students going to school in New York, if they start expressing, Western ideas or they start criticizing their home government, they get hauled in by these secret police and these Chinese courts, like Sharia courts,
right.
that are set up in America. Mm-hmm. And like, we need to ferret that stuff out.
Get that out of here.
This is our country.
It's our country. Get that out of here. If you don't like it, go home.
Yeah.
Right? Fine.
Right.
And that's not racist.
No.
At all to say that.
No. They have their country. This is our country.
Yeah, this is ours. Right. You want these things that happen in your country. Well, go take it at your country. Yeah.
Right.
Or go have them in your country.
Right.
So this brings us up to, you know, in 1965, was it, Norm? The Immigration Act of 1965.
Boom.
Where Johnson signs it, and it sort of changes how we accepted immigrants. You know, before that, it was a quota system. We would take on certain quotas of different people that we thought would match our structure and our system. Well, Kennedy didn't like that, or Teddy Kennedy didn't like that, and they changed it. So now they started, and look what I've seen these flowcharts now where before 65, it was almost all like Northern Europeans, not Eastern Europeans, but just Europeans were coming in, and then some Eastern Europeans and some from China, Japan, and the Far East. And then after 65, it's almost all within the continent. You know, it's almost all Hispanics and others coming in. So it's almost all brown skin folks, if you're going to use the language. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it does show, like, that's been what's changed. And this is what, when I first heard on Facebook, I started to see this criticism of the Afrikaners and people saying America's systemically racist. And
yeah.
Clearly, this is evidence of racism. Clearly, this is.
You're speaking about the 50 Afrikaners that just came over.
That just came over. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Which is why I picked Jamestown, so I could sort of give this history.
People might know. So those are white, basically Dutch. Dutch or German ancestry from South Africa.
And maybe even some British. I'm sure it's mixed in because the British came shortly after.
And they had a war.
They had a war, two of them, I think, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a lot of criticism how this country must be racist because we let 50 Afrikaners in as refugees.
Right.
Which is insane. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, there's been this meme that's been beaten into school kids, into the general culture. It's on The View. It's on CNN. That the only people who can hold hatred over skin color are white people. That it's white people that are the bad people, and everybody else is you know good and can't possibly be racist. Yeah. And
well, I always reverse this stuff. If there were 50 Africans,
yeah,
Native Africans, so yeah, black skinned,
yeah,
who were having their land taken away from them,
right.
And actually, violently, I guess, as it turns out, right, and suffering discrimination and prejudice, I think we would take those folks, too.
Well, sure.
Well, but, I mean, the definition of a refugee is a person who's been forced to leave their country in order to escape war, persecution, or natural disaster.
Right.
And has nothing to do with color, race,
nothing.
Female, male. Nothing. It's a person.
And that, by the way, is not the legal standard for immigration. Natural disaster does not count.
Right.
Oh, and again, that was just me pulling.
You don't
get
to come to America because a volcano.
Well, and that was just, you know, probably the as a result of a natural disaster, refugee. Yeah. You're right.
Asylum is a different thing.
Juxtapose the Afghans who Biden let in because they were suffering war, whatever. Well, now Trump is saying, well, look, it's fine. You can go back home now. It's all safe. Go back home.
Yeah.
There's more. It just seems like such a media trope to jump immediately on systemic racism,
right,
without analyzing this. And it's such a great way to show it because, look, because of the color of the skin, I think what the media is taking the position, they can't be suffering any discrimination,
right,
because they're white.
Well, and there's a lot of hypocrisy out there, like on The View, that Sunny Hostin lady who...
geniuses.
Well, her DNA. So she's an attorney, shockingly. So she did one of those shows on public television where they traced her DNA, and it turns out that she has slaveholder DNA in her background.
You see her face. There's like there's this famous thing. Right?
So she on her show said to the Afrikaners, even though their ancestors had been in South Africa now for almost a couple hundred years.
Like 1600s, I think, right?
So it's like she says, go home to the Netherlands or Belgium or Germany or wherever your ancestors came from. And I'm kind of scratching my head saying, well, gee, Sonny, you've got slaveholder DNA. Does that hold for you then? If we said that, like to your point, Steve, if we said that about 50 Haitians that we gave asylum to, right? So flip the colors. And if white people were to say about the 50 black Haitians, go home, right? You'd be branded a racist.
Yeah.
Why is the left getting away with saying to white people that they need to go home? It's just as racist as it would be
otherwise.
And the point
is, this country has let in, since 1965, almost like, I don't know what the percentages are, but almost all brown-skinned folks.
Yeah.
Almost all.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And for either from Haiti or wherever they're from, right? And
try to emigrate from England, for example. You can't do it.
You can't do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, look, it just seems so short-sighted, not short-sighted, not through, but it just seems like such a cliche trope to just say, all right, America's systemic racist. And I saw this on Facebook from somebody I know. I'm not going to mention the person's name. And then, you know, all the comments like, yes, of course, typical, blah, 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 blah,
right,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And no real analysis of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like, look, go read the history of the Boer Wars and the Boers from Dutch and how they got there and what happened.
Right.
And, you know, that ultimately culminated in apartheid, which was horrid.
Sure.
And now that's flipped completely backwards.
Right.
And it's horrid.
Sure.
Right. Both things are bad.
That's exactly right.
Right. Like, both things are bad.
It's human misbehavior. It's human hatred that can be of any color. I don't know why that isn't just patently obvious. You know, and the really sad thing about what's going on in South Africa is all that work by the Anglican bishop, Desmond Tutu, who held these forgiveness hearings where, you know, the South African apartheid cops would come in, they would confess to the murders they did and to the beatings they did, and then, you know, the Afrikaners The black Africans would come in and in their tribal warfare where they did tire burnings around people's heads, they would confess their crimes. And basically what Tutu was trying to do was he thought it was like a psychological, you know, sofa for the whole country. Let's all expurgate all of these horrible stories. Let's get them out there. Let's forgive each other. And let's then go forward without any bias against each other.
That didn't work.
Well, that was too pie in the sky,
yeah,
obviously.
Right, just pissed people off.
So what's
more.
Going on? Why do they want to come over? Well, there are laws now, just like we have laws that our Supreme Court finally got rid of on affirmative action. They have laws in South Africa that state that certain races have certain benefits and other races don't.
Other races, like property ownership, for
exactly.
instance. So right. It's really, there's some Marxism going on, too. It's like these people are aligned with the communists,
yeah.
with China,
right.
and I think probably, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing the Soviets or the Russians, rather, are, I mean, it just is... They're bad people.
Well, did you hear at the political
right, they're bad people.
The political convention for the ruling party in South Africa, at their convention, the whole audience sang a song about killing white farmers.
About killing white farmers, right.
Like, and that's their song.
And no white farmer deserves to die. No black farmer deserves to die.
Pay him for his land and let him leave.
Let him leave. Give him, if you're going to take his land,
leave.
We do this in our country. Government takes land all the time to go build highways and whatever. They pay for it. Now, if you're taking somebody's land because of their skin color, that's a whole different story.
Right. It's
whether
wrong.
Whether you're paying for it or not.
But at least pay him.
But at least pay him and let him get out of there. Instead, it's turning violent. It's bad. Whatever. Go read the history. Go look it up.
Yeah.
It's more than what we can delve into today. But it's just a deeper problem, and typically the tip of the iceberg, I said tip twice, typically the tip of the iceberg is all that people are looking at and saying, all right, we're just a bunch of racists.
So what I hate about this story is it forces us to talk about, you know, defending the rights of these put upon white people. What we're not talking about is that Steve, Brett, and Norm, I'm sure during the apartheid, these two guys were just like me, totally against apartheid, totally for the bans and the U.S. de-investment in South Africa. So we took the side of black folks in South Africa.
Of course, right,
yeah.
Of course.
So you know, don't make us look bad.
If this is reversed.
This is reversed.
We would have the same position.
We would have
and look,
the same
and,
position.
And maybe back to where we started, and then we'll move on. This is about American values. Our values are property ownership, better yourself. You have opportunity.
Right.
You can we
color
like
colorblind.
Colorblind family. Now, has it always been that way? Of course not. We have a sordid history of slavery and some other stuff.
It's right. A difficult thing to do. Like, what's that? What was a quote from one? Forget what the movie was. That anyway, the guy was on the stand talking about. It's like, you know, do you see me as a black person or color? He says, "Of course I do. It's what I do next that makes me or doesn't make me a racist."
That's right. So
and I thought that is so insightful. That's such a good quote that that's exactly what it is.
You're exactly right, because seeing somebody as a black person or white person or whatever, it is a fiction
mm-hmm.
to claim
right.
that you don't. Of course you do.
Yeah, of course.
Of course you
course.
Do.
Right.
We all do. So what we're talking about when we're colorblind is the law should be colorblind.
Right.
How we treat people should be colorblind.
Right. Right.
And generally speaking, that's what I think we would all
aspire to
do.
Yeah.
And, you know, is
try to.
And our country has not always done that. I think we are doing the best, probably better than we ever have at it.
Oh my gosh. No question.
And the more we try to do to fix it, the worse it gets. So anyway, let's with that, we will move on with more news with Norm.
Pete Rose.
Yeah.
How about that, Petey?
Yeah.
And Shoeless Joe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Shoeless Joe.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, Major League Baseball is totally in bed with the gambling industry today. I mean, FanDuel has a corporate link, corporate, like they're joined at the hip with MLB. There are kiosks at Major League Baseball stadiums where you can walk up and bet on the damn game that you're sitting there watching.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
I mean,
well, look, though. So Petey's case, here's the problem with it, though. He lied. And you know, this
he,
is like
he did.
He could never live that down.
So was he banned for lying?
Well,
I mean, I'm
yes
starting
no.
to roll my eyes about
talking
the whole thing.
As somebody who has represented folks in criminal courts
yeah.
my entire career professionally for 30 years this
right,
year.
Right.
you have the crime and then you have how you deal with it. And I often stand in front of a judge and say, judge, look, we can't, there's no way to justify what this guy did. And you can't ask him to go back in time and change it because he can't do that. What I can offer you is an explanation as to how it happened. And I can talk to you about what he's done now.
Right.
And what a man does after the mistake makes all the difference. Pete screwed up the end game. He did. He lied about it. He was arrogant about it. I mean, how many years did he deny it when it was so obvious? And he just, and it got into, it turned into an ego contest between, not Rosa, who was the?
Giamatti.
Giamatti.
Yeah. And then they said Pete killed Giamatti because Giamatti had a heart attack.
And it, right. And it turned so into this now pissing
Pete's
contest.
Now Pete's guilty of homicide.
Right. So look, you know, yeah. So. And Pete did himself no favors. He was, his ego got in the way.
He was Pete Rose.
He's so, Pete Rose. Yeah, all the way to the end, he was Pete Rose.
So yeah. I'll be the defense attorney here because I'm from Cincinnati. The New York sports writers absolutely hated the Reds. Like that's just a fact. And now that Pete has been unbanned, I don't think they're going to vote him into the Hall of Fame for a while yet.
Oh, no.
Because they still hate the Reds. They hate flyover country. They hate the Indians. They hate, believe me, it's a East Coast Borg that votes on who gets into the Hall. And there's a certain profile that they're looking for. And frankly, I don't understand why the baseball players themselves don't vote. Instead, it's these sports writers, as if they're somehow blessed and anointed with special, you know, knowledge. And I think it's crap. You got O.J. Simpson in the Football Hall of Fame. And he murdered two people.
Well, was he in the Hall of Fame before he murdered two people?
He's in the Hall of Fame before he murdered two people. Yeah. They didn't ban him and take him out of football. Yes. Right. Well, so listen.
Look, and I'm sure there's plenty of baseball players who are bad characters.
Oh, yeah.
So Pete and I, we both grew up on the west side of Cincinnati. And I know a little bit about Pete, and I know a little bit about his wife and about their son. And basically, they're just very basic people. They're high school graduates. All Pete wanted to do was play baseball. He dove headfirst into the bases. This was Charlie Hustle. So when they came around and said, Pete, did you bet on baseball, right? Of course he's going to say no. So, I mean, because he knows what the consequences are going to be. So he did lie, per Steve. That's correct. He did lie. But there's no way he bet against the Reds. He was manager of the Reds, and there's no way. At one point, he was a player manager for the Reds, and there is no way he would have bet against the Reds.
That's irrelevant, though. I don't want to call it irrelevant. That was too much of a statement. But yeah. I think what really sunk Pete's case when he was still alive is the cover-up. He lied about it, and he doubled down on his lying, tripled down on his lying.
Well, he wrote
for years.
Steve, he wrote like three books, and it took him until the third book to admit that he bet.
Right.
Yeah. So he denied it in the first couple of books and several interviews. And then he finally, towards the end of his life.
He was because he wanted to get in before he died. So it looked like then he was only coming clean because he was trying to get what he wanted. He was a baby screaming and yelling and crying and trying to get what he wanted. And I'm not saying that's true, but that's what it looks like.
No. I think you're essentially right.
And they said, no, we're not going to reward this. We're not going to do it until you're gone.
Yeah. And I think the penalty on him exceeded the crime.
Yeah,
that's what
there was an interview with Marty Brenneman, who is the former Reds announcer.
John Nuxall Marty Brenneman.
Yeah, and he asked him about Pete, and it was right after talking to him about Pete's death.
Yeah,
and I think he made a comment. I'm going to paraphrase it, but he was encouraging the family if Pete were to be nominated for the Hall of Fame to turn it down.
Interesting.
Just for the sake of. No.
We don't need your damn
Hall of Fame. We don't need it. And I'm thinking, there's something to it, I guess. I mean, that's his thought, perspective
they
of
would
it.
Not
it's like,
do
okay,
that,
I doubt it. I think it's
see, that's the same pride. That's that same pride getting in the way.
It is. And it could be emotion post Pete passing away too.
Marty knows is what I said.
Yeah.
There is a huge amount of bias. Within the
all new to me. I didn't
within the voting.
Take your word for it.
It's sports writers that vote on this,
right.
Which is complete bullshit.
Look, I get it.
Yeah,
the Reds were the first baseball team, though. By the way,
yes, they were.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Cincinnati Red Stockings.
Right. And it's said to be the origins of baseball are said to be Native American.
Yeah, They had like games and like, yeah. I remember seeing diagrams in mm-hmm. grade school about this stuff.
Which is kind of cool. Like
diamond or whatever.
And I guess the Mayans, like if you lost a soccer game there, so I don't know what the Native Americans did with baseball, but basically the losing soccer team with the Mayans got sacrificed.
Yeah, they got their heads cut off or something. If you anybody who's been to like Chichen Itza or what's the other big one down there?
You talk about, you know, incentive. Wow.
Yeah, they have a great soccer field there. Yeah.
Jeez.
Tulum. Tulum's the other one.
Yeah.
One of them has a soccer field, and they tell that story. It's crazy.
Wow.
All right. The show must go on.
The show must go
on. So we've got a
little bit about the drug thing, I think, is important. So we had this comprehensive show last week with Marty Schladen from Ohio Capital Journal, and he broke down beautifully how – basically three PBMs, which are in a vertical conflict of interest, a monopoly, if you will, with drug manufacturers, then the PBMs, then the insurance companies, and then the HMOs. And it's like two or three of these companies control several of those links in that distribution chain and in the pricing chain. And so here comes Trump, must have been listening to Common
Had
Sense
to be, exactly.
Like 2 days later.
Or Yost gave him a call saying, you know, I really need some help with the AG work. And, you know, yeah.
And Trump has basically, like, on steroids, done what – so a while ago, the federal government established discounts from Medicaid and Medicare. But Trump has gone way past that and has said basically cutting out the middleman, these pharmacy benefit management companies, and has said that Americans will no longer be the ones holding the entire burden of the research, development, and approval and trials of these drugs. And then people in England and France and, you know, everywhere else get to buy these drugs for like 20% of what we pay. So we're paying list price here in America, and you say $1,000, and then they get to buy the drug for $20.
I don't know enough about this, but I do know this.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's a fix. It seems like it's another tweak that is going to backfire. Whenever the government puts its thumb on the scale of the fair market or the free markets.
Well, it's not a free market. That's
well, that's
point.
The problem because that's it's already problem. Got its hand on the scale. Now we're just going to put its hand on the other side
well,
of the scale.
Other countries have their hands on the scale.
Yeah, but I mean, why can't we just say drugs?
It's like the tariff debate, Steve.
Why can't we just say drug manufacturers make your drugs and sell them as you will?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Why can't we do that?
You can.
And so if the government got completely out of it, so look, then, I get it's an oversimplification, but if the government gets completely
so
out of it.
So I'll give you one example. Let me answer your question. Yeah. So there was that young billionaire that bought that, what was it, an insulin drug company. This happened 2 years ago, right? And he took the price of the whatever it was, this insulin drug that there was a patent on and only his company was making it. And he took it from like $200 to just willy-nilly, I'm going to make it like $2,000 mm-hmm. overnight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of abuse, because if a company has a patent on something and it is of great use to, you know, to correct people's health, do you really want them to have a monopoly and they can set the price at anything?
Well, the presumption there is no other drug, there is no other treatment, there is no other way to treat the same thing. Because if they're charging $2,000, I would think that would incentivize somebody else to come around with something else that does not, or that doesn't violate the patent, but does the same thing. And then the $2,000 drug is going to drop immediately.
But you know so how long you know how long trials.
Well, look,
take,
the government's
right?
hand is in it. That's the problem. Yeah. And look, so. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be regulations on dispensing drugs, because obviously we've done that.
Well, look what happened with COVID because they bypassed trials.
But the government incentivized these people. The government said, we are going to buy so much of this drug, so we're going to buy it from you, and they're the vaccines for that purpose. So and they got rid of the trial period, and everybody made a shit ton of money. And it caused a whole lot of damage. But the government was in on it. right?
Well,
and that's the problem.
The problem with your and I know you're speaking theoretically.
I'm speaking totally theoretically.
And I love this kind of discussion. It's great. There's two things. One is, so a free market doesn't really work unless you also have some antitrust protections. And you can't have one company own all the railroads, or one company own all the gasoline stations, or one company own all the grocery stores. And that's the point of right now, like they're trying to break up Google, because Google controls basically most of all the search engine business. And so, you know, you get one answer, and it's one that's biased by advertising dollars. So the government decided, we as a culture decided that we were going to have our fellow citizens pay for other people's health care, right? So we're all subsidizing each other, you know, with Obamacare, and we're doing Medicare and Medicaid. So that decision to have a free market's already been blown. If the government is the main provider of drugs outside of private health care, then, you know, they're entitled to try to get a discount. At least the same discount as foreign countries are paying.
I can't argue with that.
So you know all about these tours that go up to Canada. Old people get on buses in Toledo, right? And they go over to Ontario to buy drugs.
Look, I can't fault that. I'm saying is, theoretically speaking, we have the analogy I always use, so any woodworker understands this. If you try to build a 45-degree picture frame, so four corners,
right,
and it's off a little bit, and you think, well, no worries, it's just off on this upper right corner. I'm gonna run that through my miter saw and just shave off a little bit.
Right.
Well, now it's a little bit shorter, and then you go to the other corner, and that's off a little
exactly.
bit. And then you keep going until it's totally screwed up.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
Yeah.
It's totally screwed up. So this is another corner shave, and it's going to have repercussions beyond this that are going to have to then be fixed. And it has no end. It's bottomless. Once you start tweaking it, it's bottomless. Or we could revamp the whole system and say, this is stupid. What are we doing? And I don't profess to have the answers, but I would suggest that these little tweaks and these constant things are only going to have repercussions elsewhere.
Well,
healthcare industry.
We've added an 11th item to the Bill of Rights, right? That people now have the right to health care.
A right to health care.
Like, where
which
did
we
that,
don't.
Where did that come from?
There's no right to health care.
You know where it came from? Our hearts. People see somebody else suffering.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. And this is a very feminine thing.
And
also,
we had that. We had it in our hearts before. There was like a big giant organization that had it in its heart.
Churches.
It was the Catholic Church.
And the Red Cross.
Right?
And
we government has hijacked all of that
Samaritan's
and taken
Purse.
It over.
That's right.
Right. So there are no Sacred Heart hospitals anymore. It's
no.
all government subsidized stuff. And once you do that, all the money that the government has to filter through this huge layer. Like I'm trying to think what the Earth's crust is, or like
the mantle of
solid crap that filters out like 80% of the money, and then at the bottom, the healthcare gets that.
Yeah.
Because we have to support this huge infrastructure to dole out the money that we're taking from our country's citizens.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll shut up about it. After
I mean, what Marty was giving us some insights to last week was just how high the list price is in America, and how all the fakery that goes on, that, like, you know, you show your little card at CVS and they go, well, because you've got this card, you get this drug.
What is different than the government saying, look, cars cost too much money, so we're not going to let you sell cars to U.S. citizens for a price that exceeds X? I mean, really, what's the difference?
Well, it's more antitrust than that. What they're saying is, you can't price it higher than you charge these other customers. You can't pick and choose which customers you give the price
to. And ultimately, he was giving a good example of how the local pharmacies in local communities are going away because the kickbacks are going to the CVS.
They're charging
the
local pharmacies more than
CVS. Of course.
They can't. Because CVS owns the PBMs that sets the price.
So, I'm with you.
Yeah.
So that's all been created by the government. All of it.
The PBMs were created by the government.
All of that is a government creation. We have created this Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And now Trump is just going to slap another. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to put something on the Frankenstein to fix it. And it may work. And it's probably better than what it is now.
Well, it's 30 to 80%, depending on the drug, less money. And, you know.
There'll be a ramification. Well, I don't understand the industry enough, but there will be something, unintended consequence of this that we're not talking
which
about.
Which probably won't hurt us initially. It'll be that from what I've heard, the pharmacy or the drug manufacturers will pull out of third world countries helping them initially because they can't afford to do it anymore.
Maybe. Yep. There'll be a consequence to that. Maybe somebody else will take that place.
That domino effect.
I'll tell you what. I am totally sick of hearing from my friends in England about their national health care system, which...
Right then.
You know, right. And they pay a huge amount of income tax to support this NHS system that they have. And they waddle into the clinic and they go, hey, I only put $5 down and I can get, you know, my annual,
Yeah, but if you need a cancer treatment, good luck. You're waiting. I don't know.
Well, they tell you, you know, we'll palliate you and make you comfortable. But, you're not going to make it, dude, unless you want to fly to America.
You have a right to health care, but not to live.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to treat you all the same.
And you can't buy it.
But what they brag about is they brag about like their vaccines that they pay for. The same drug that we have to pay is just way less expensive. And it's because the Merck or Ross or Abbott Labs or whoever is making the U.S. patients pay for the research, development, and trials, and then the foreign countries.
So ultimately, the price maybe levels out and it gets a little bit higher for it gets lower for us, higher for them.
Yeah,
and it's gonna and it may end up in the same place.
Possibly,
So that's the other thing. That can happen
I just want it to be fair. Yeah. I think we're getting screwed in this country.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we're paying.
I always wondered what would happen if, like, we went back to the old West Sawbones. I'm going to walk down the street and talk to old Doc Jones and. He's going to make a house call with his black bag and help me out at home and sew up my cut, and I'll pay him $50 if I have it.
Or you'll build a fence for him.
Or I'll build a fence.
Or whatever.
It's, it's sort of like being a lawyer.
Yeah.
Right. There's no human right to health or to legal care.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of tilts us into another discussion about that's kind of similar. This big budget bill, which is... beautiful bill. It's kind of punching through, and they're coming up with some good things, and that other things I question. One thing is I love this because it completely blows up this meme that Elon Musk controls Trump. There are no EV subsidies, no EV grants said to be in this budget bill. So Tesla will no longer get that $7,000, tax credit for the purchaser. And Tesla itself will no longer be getting grants from the Department of Energy.
Good.
So that's great.
I don't care where Elon works or who he's helping. Mm. I don't think that the government should put its thumb on that scale either.
No. Mm. But what is a little disturbing, and I know Steve loves, and Brett, me, we love this discussion, is about this no tax on tips. And it's confusing to me because if they limit it only to food service, only to waiters and waitresses, I just don't understand it because you tip all kinds of. Well, how about the guy that goes and gets your car, the valet? You tip him.
I had a guy.
Any service industry has a tip capability.
Promised me. It was a client who promised me. Look.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can't do ethically. I can't do this. But they said,
yeah.
Here we've paid you X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
But if you get my son probation, I'm going to double it and give you that again. First of all, I'm not allowed to take a contingency fee in a criminal case. I can't do that.
Right. And lobbyists can't do that either.
But like what if I just called it a tip?
You go get this law passed.
Well, yeah.
That's a tip. It's not legal services because I've already done the work. It's just a tip.
Right.
And why don't I take that money tax-free? Or then I thought about, I'm going to put a little kitchen upstairs.
Yeah.
So you come in for a meeting with me. You're going to get lunch.
Yeah.
And I'm going to serve you.
And the kitchen will be in honor of? The guy that gave it to you.
Right. So you're
and he
get,
writes a $10,000 check
get a gourmet
for
lunch. I only and I'm going to give you free legal services, but your lunch costs you $10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, your lunch cost $1,000. I'd expect a $9,000 tip.
Yeah.
So now I'm paying tax on $1,000.
It's all crazy.
Why can't I do that?
Yeah.
Look, and if you don't, yeah. This is the problem with trying to screw with this kind of
That's
stuff.
That's right.
Because, look, as soon as you have tips that were taxed, what did it do? It immediately shoved all the tips underground. And anybody who, I have never worked in the food service industry, but I have heard the stories of what they do. They dole out the cash.
Or if they want to do it above ground, these Byzantine accounting systems, right. Where all the money supposedly goes into a pot, and then the people in the kitchen get a certain amount.
So who gets what, and what's a tip, and how's it going to be a tip, and is it really going to change anything? This is a political show.
Right.
Exactly. Sure. And it was the same discussion when Biden was in office.
Same thing.
It's just a political show almost to buy votes to a certain degree.
This is vote buying. This is political theater. This is tip theater.
Yeah.
I think this is an interesting cultural benchmark. At the last Columbia University Hamas riot, which basically there's like two people from Hamas and then it's basically students and, trouble causers. They arrested 80 people. And this is interesting, and it's something I've always kind of suspected. 61 of the 80 people, 61, so 75%, are females.
Hmm.
So what the hell is going on with women or girls where they are now getting involved in these radical groups? What are they seeing out there? Do they feel the need to solve?
I think the opposite is also true. I think I have heard that we are totally spitballing here. I don't have stats to back this up, but I have heard that and sort of seen anecdotally.
Yeah.
That younger males are sort of going the other direction. Younger males are looking for structure. They're looking for like traditional American, like going back to church, becoming conservative, basically,
yeah.
As opposed to the females who are going this direction. So I don't know what the psychology is. It's interesting.
Well, the Jordan Peterson book, the 12 rules and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of written for boys. Like they were.
I don't think he wrote it for boys, but boys identified it with it more so.
They're devouring that kind of stuff.
Because guys needed that. I mean, guys like to have some purpose in life.
And I hear men are also not attending colleges and universities in the same numbers. Mm-mm. They do not feel welcome on campus.
Look, my son at a college here in Ohio, he and his buddies, and they're not, I mean, they're just normal dudes from wherever.
Right.
It's like, I can see them. They're different. Like they're all shifting towards this more. Mm-hmm. Now they don't say it out loud because they're afraid, but they're all shifting towards this more conservative approach. And I'm not saying that, and it's not just because he's getting schooled for me at home. I mean, maybe that has something to do with it, but I just sort of see this happening. And, he wants to start he's already saving for his retirement. He's already like looking for his future. He's already looking for that job. He's already looking for that purpose to go forward. And that's what guys need. I know that because I need that.
Well,
we have to have a purpose.
This fits into another.
And girls need a purpose too, but it's a little bit different.
Well, this fits into another piece of disturbing news. So I saw that our new Pope, I say R because I'm Catholic, the new Pope, Pope Leo XIV, made some comments about AI, the dangers of AI. And coincidentally, the same week, this study came out that disturbingly, young men are creating AI girlfriends. Instead of having a real human girlfriend, they are finding, and this is kind of what Zuckerberg was saying the same week, is like, gosh, it's so hard to find real human friends. So what I think you should do on Facebook is develop a friendship with an AI friend. So a non-existent person that you then date. And you love them, and you talk to them.
This is the apex of fallen society.
Yeah,
this is like you're at the top of the mountain, and after that's the cliff.
This is apparently there are thousands of these young men that have AI girlfriends.
I mean, that's lunacy. And porn is very similar. If you read the studies on porn, it's like
people. I could say, I would think it'd be real similar. Like people,
the guys who look at porn, they have just totally screwed up sex life. Because look, it's never what it's depicted in the porn movies. The girls are never doing those kind of things. They're never saying those kind of things. It's not real. And that's how they've associated sex.
Yeah.
And it screws it up for them forever.
I mean,
and they're not having sex. Like there are studies on this. Like young men are having less sex than ever And you could say that's a good thing because we, you know, you want to have a traditional value structure where you wait until you're married or whatever it is. You could say that's a good thing.
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of
on
like,
the other hand, it's for all the wrong reasons.
It's kind of like women in general. I mean, it used to be, it was just white men, but now it's all men. It's Chicano men, it's black men, it's white men, it's any kind of man, is like, we're the problem. I mean, more and more women are really just down on men, like really angry at men, think we're the problem, blame us for electing Trump. There's this whole meme that men are the problem with society.
And maybe that's it, right? So if they've been taught that, if they've been trained that, if they've been taught that or indoctrinated into that ideology, of course they're miserable and they're going to be out screaming at the moon because there is nothing there for them anymore.
But I see plenty of memes coming out with women that voted for Trump though too, which is, so it's one of those, what are they being fed? What are they allowing themselves to be fed? It's a male problem. You know, I agree with you, but it's that
way more men voted for Trump than women.
I think that's probably true statistically,
you know,
but you know what's happening now, to your point, Brett, is that women are actually not afraid to say it now. I think in the first Trump election, there were probably more women than we thought that voted for Trump back in 16, but they wouldn't say it.
Right.
And, oh God, no.
And now they are. And I think
the men wouldn't say.
So there has been, that's right. So there's been, there's been this shift in culture. It's like everything has been exposed. And I remember I argued with our exchequer, my very close friend. We argued about, he said the country's lost. And now it's not lost. The country's not lost.
Well, I'm more on his side,
but I said, just watch what's going to happen because they being the left is going to take over for 4 years and it is going to be an unmitigated total disaster. They are going to expose the core, the rot that they want to do. And they did. They did in the worst ways, lost.
But Steve, they teach at university now about toxic masculinity, and men have to be more feminine,
the women don't like that.
Well, it's women teaching all that.
Yeah, I get it, but it's not attractive to their would-be mates.
I hope you're right.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I know I'm right.
Yeah,
I mean, look, you never say something's an absolute, but look. Anybody who's been on the dating scene understands that that doesn't work.
Hey, a little justice stuff. I'm curious, Steve, to hear your analysis on this Menendez brothers thing.
Yeah.
So if just to review in one sentence here, and then we'll turn it over to Steve. But like they were sentenced to a life sentence without parole. Then along comes Garcetti, the attorney, the city attorney there in L.A., who's since been replaced. And he agreed to allow for a resentencing.
Mm-hmm.
The judge has just resentenced them from life without parole to life, to 50 years to life. And that makes them immediately eligible as of now to appeal for parole.
Yeah. So look, this is first of all, don't take this
as. And these are guys that killed their parents.
Guys that killed their parents. The Menendez case, there's been a documentary on it recently on Netflix. Yeah. And these are, first of all, don't attribute what happened here procedurally to every other state, and don't not attribute it to every other state. But this is this is happening under California law. This is happening under California post-conviction law. Ohio does not have a similar provision for quote resentencing. So the prosecutor in the county where somebody is convicted in Ohio could not just agree to a resentencing.
Okay.
Procedurally, that doesn't exist in Ohio. In California, it does. And I'm not saying that's wrong. It's just, it's different.
Yeah, it's different.
There may be another mechanism in Ohio where you might be able to get to that same place, but not that seamlessly as they did in California. And I sort of like California's provision because it does leave room for things like that happened in the Menendez case. Because I did a dive into this in my other other podcast, Lawyer Talk, and I can't remember all the
episodes. Episodes 349 and 342. Check it out.
349 and 342 of Lawyer Talk, off the record, on the air.
Yep.
And there was a letter that the kids wrote to their uncle, I believe their uncle, where prior to any of this happening, where they discussed, I'm probably butchering the facts, but the theory generally is that they discussed the abuse that they were suffering from their parents.
Right.
That letter was not admitted at their second trial. The jury never heard about it, and the prosecutor came in, I think took the position that the boys were lying about the abuse that they had suffered. Well, look, I don't know if they were lying about it. It could be that the letter was written only to, as a part of a plan, a devious, purposeful plan to kill their parents and then justify it later. Or it could be that they were actually suffering abuse and that lends credibility to it. Either way, the jury should have heard it, I think. And that emerged. And I think that is what the prosecutor initially was hanging his hat on when he was, aside from some ideological stuff. But that would be the linchpin. So we've got some new evidence, and we think the jury should have heard it. Instead of like going through the whole procedural rigmarole of litigating whether there should be a whole nother trial, what we'll do is resentence them. We'll give them a chance to get out, give them parole. They've done, what, 20, 30 years?
Do you know, I don't know so. Factually, were they minors?
No, what? I think they were, I do not think they were minors charged as adults. I think they started as young adults.
So they were over 18.
I think they were over
18. When they committed these.
I don't know for sure. We could look it up, but I don't know for sure. But yeah, they were over 18.
Yeah.
I think that on the retrial, this evidence did not get presented. I think everybody sort of looks at this like, well, wait a minute. This is favorable to the defense, and now it's emerging. The jury should have heard this. What do we do about it? And that's the linchpin to get these guys out. Now, look, if you want to talk to me generally about sentencing and what is to be served by making these kids spend the rest of their lives in prison versus where they were when they were 20 or 18, whenever they committed the crimes, that's a whole nother psychological debate. I mean, they're different people. They're not the same people.
Yeah.
And this isn't to say long prison sentences are never appropriate, but I don't think it's discussed enough. You know, like go watch Shawshank Redemption and look at it's a great example of this. Like you go to Red, who is what's his name's character?
I know who you mean.
The longest night of his life.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Morgan Freeman.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They were the Menendez brothers were 18 and 21 when they committed the crime in 1989 and were convicted and sentenced in 1996 at the ages of 25 and 28.
Yeah. So they're at 18 and 19, 20 years old, we're not the same people that you are when you're 40 or 50.
I got to do this. I think Red was James Whitmore, the guy with the red hair that hung himself.
No, Red was, no. Yeah. Red was Morgan Freeman.
So when scrawled up there, Red was here.
That's him.
Morgan. Yeah. He wrote that.
He wrote that. Yeah. Okay. They called him Red. I don't remember why.
I can't think of the name of the little guy who was in there too long. And he's the guy that kept turning down his own parole.
Yeah. The old guy.
And wanted to stay in prison.
Brooksy. That was Brooks.
And he hung himself.
Yeah. That was Brooks.
Yeah.
So, but the idea was Red, you know, like his little speech at his parole hearings as they showed that incrementally over time, it's like his last one where he got parole was like, look, I don't know why I did
it. I don't really want to go. Yeah.
You know, whatever you're going to do, you're going to do. I don't really care, Sonny. Do it. You know, mark your paper, do whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's looking back and saying, this is stupid. I don't even know who I was. He admitted that he killed this guy when he was like 18 or 20, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was dumb. He's not the same guy. He's learned from it. He's clearly never going to do it again. The movie showcases that he's a good man despite that. And now the question is, as a society, how do we punish people like that? And what do you do? And I'm not saying it's wrong to put people in life for prison or prison for life, because there are crimes that probably justify that. But it's also, there's another side to that. And that is after 10, 15, 20 years, who is this person? It's not the same person. And should the law, I ask rhetorically, give people an out?
I would say some of them are not the same.
Like that's right.
Charlie Manson, I think, was pretty much the same person all the way.
And that's a guy as Paul Scarsella. We had a guest on the show one time who's a prosecutor who's got plenty of people on murder prosecutions that some people just need killing. And maybe Manson was one of them, right?
Yeah, but they didn't kill him. Wish they did. I mean, what he did, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting Supreme Court decision, guys. You know about the transgender? I think she was an admiral, or he was an admiral. I don't know what the right thing to say is. Rachel Levine took a case and was turned down by the Supreme Court, and they ruled in a very short paragraph that the president of either party, any president, has absolute authority to set the standards for the armed forces.
Well, I don't think they ruled that. I think what they ruled wasn't that really just
that was in their turndown message.
There was a request for an injunction. I think what they wanted was the Supreme Court to say you can't enforce this law until it's been litigated all the way up.
But they said a little more. They included in their message was
it could be right
that POTUS had quote absolute authority.
So they're telegraphing that they're going to do with it, perhaps. But, you know, procedurally, it looks like that's where they're going.
Taking out 1,000 transgenders are being kicked out of the military. They have 30 days to resign or they'll be removed by force.
Yep. So love it or leave it, they say. I don't know good, bad, or ugly. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's good. I don't think you need that chaos in the armed forces.
Well, I think there are two things.
It's chaos.
You could easily be somebody who identifies as a woman or a man if you're the opposite gender and be in the army. But the army was doing, it doesn't mean you have to act on it. If I'm that person, that's one thing. But this was about a lot more than that. They were saying you can dress up this way, you can act this way, and the army or the military has to treat you as if you're a woman when you're really a man,
and then treat you medically,
which means pay for surgeries.
Those are different things.
Yeah. So I could be trans in the army, but it doesn't mean that I'm dressing up and acting like a woman. I didn't have to tell anybody. I can just go do it, and that's that. You know, and I'm sure that exists.
So when you join the army, you lose a bunch of your constitutional rights.
Of course.
This is not like getting a job at Kmart.
That's right.
So for God's sake.
The army has the, so look, like it or not, you give up all sorts of things. You ask anybody during COVID whether they had a right to refuse that shot.
Right.
That's true. Yeah. And that's probably a good way to frame it, that when you're in the armed forces, it's a different world.
Yeah. You get to be screamed at, yelled at.
Uniform code of military justice.
Yeah, that's right. You give up your freedom of speech. You give up all sorts of things.
Anyway. Steve, do you know much about this Columbus Black Widow prostitute killer lady?
I don't.
So this lady, she's 34 years old, Rebecca Auburn. Her trial starts on May the 20th. It's been delayed since 2023 for various reasons. But she is accused 28 different counts of different things. But basically, it's 5 assaults, 4 of which resulted in death of men who, you know, lined up for, you know, sex over several years, and then she killed them, robbed them, and killed them with fentanyl. And this was in Columbus in the I-71, State Route 161, Cleveland Avenue, and East 17th areas. And she was finally, they figured out who was doing the serial killings. It was the Ohio Human Trafficking Task Force. And I just think it's really a strange situation. Apparently
it is bizarre.
Somebody else, another prostitute, was just arrested this week on kind of a similar killing.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on out there. People are using fentanyl as a means of killing other people, which,
well, yeah, look, if you're a John and you hook up with a prostitute and she wants to take your, he, it could be either way, I suppose, wants to take your cash, they put you to sleep and take your cash. It's an easy way to, I mean, look, it's as old as the hills, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Kill somebody and take their stuff.
Throw you another one, Steve. So there is a constitution, and I know you hate constitutional amendments in Ohio because it's 51% and then it's in, which is ridiculous. But Ohio, a group has gotten the ballot board to approve language to strip from cops, firemen, and teachers qualified immunity in Ohio. And they need 400,000 signatures, and then it's on the ballot for the 2026 election.
I'm torn on qualified immunity, and it's probably more. I will need to give this a lot more thought as this gets closer.
Can you explain it for our guests?
Well, that means if these police officers, firemen, government workers, I mean, these are first responders too that are included in this.
And you said teachers as well.
Oh, any public employee.
Okay.
They have immunity right now from individual liability if they're operating or if whatever they have done allegedly wrong happens in the course of their duties, that you can't sue them.
Yeah.
And they're immune from lawsuits.
Yeah.
So getting rid of that, you know, there's some pros and cons, and it's a huge, I mean, that we could spend hours on this, and people have.
Yeah.
I think I will. But today's not the, all I will say is this. This will be earth-shattering, at least on its face. People will make it. I already saw that Ron O'Brien, our former Franklin County prosecutor, had a post on this and talking about it.
Yeah.
People are going to make this as if it's the worst thing in the world. I'm not sure it is the worst thing in the world. I'm not sure it isn't, but it's been around for a long time. And when you cut down fences like this that have been around for a long time, you better do it carefully.
Mm. So if you're a teacher doing a science class and you got Bunsen burners on and somebody gets burned, right? You can't go sue the teacher currently for that unless it was intentional.
Yeah, but that's not really, look, you can sue the school. I mean, look.
You could sue the police department. That, yeah. I get that.
But we're talking about
personal.
Yeah, we're talking about personal immunity. So what would that deter? Well, you know, it might deter some really bad conduct by bad government actors, but it also might deter government actors from acting at all.
Or even applying to be a policeman. But why would you be a policeman?
Likely what will happen is that insurance will emerge and they'll be covered for stuff that happens in their duty. I mean, look, the market will correct itself on this. And maybe.
I hope.
It will.
I don't know if there's many insurance, you know, like insurance doesn't want to cover hurricanes anymore.
There'll be insurance for it because the unions are strong and the money is huge. So it'll get on when you get on the payroll as an itemized deduction, then the insurance companies will do it because they're getting paid tons and tons of money. There'll be some actuary say, look, the chances of liability are this.
Right.
Here's what it'll cost an extra percentage. $15 a month if you want the insurance. And the union will negotiate a rate, and it'll work itself out.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some bumps in the road that happens.
Well, last thing I got, guys, and I know, Steve, before the show, we talked about this. Columbus City Council, and I'm sure other cities are looking at doing this, feels that renters, apartment renters, home renters, whatever, need legal representation assistance from the government when they're up for eviction for being delinquent, you know, in their rent.
All right. Well, so now what?
So now
I know where you're going.
So now you're going to get, you know, we have to collectively as taxpayers pay to represent people who.
So they get free lawyers.
They get free lawyers.
All right. So immediately you can see the problem.
Why doesn't the landlord
get
a free lawyer?
That's right. So we got an equal protection problem immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah. So we're treating one class of people different from another class of people.
It's a civil dispute.
So it's a civil dispute. So now we're going to give people free lawyers in civil disputes, and we're going to do it to incentivize people to not pay their rent. All right. That's awesome. So the landlords are going to be coming in, kicking and screaming. And you know what's going to happen? This is a classic Thomas Sowell argument. It's not that people are going to get free rent. They're not going to get any apartment to begin with.
Right.
The hoops they're going to have to jump through, if I'm a landlord, in order to rent to somebody, are going to be a lot higher and a lot more voluminous if I'm going to rent to somebody.
Rather than 1 month down, it's 3 months down.
I need 6 months down. Or I'm not renting to you. Why? Because I can't kick you out if you don't pay your damn rent.
Right.
And then what's going to, you know what, this is a classic. This is rent control.
Essentially a performance bond.
Paramount, meaning the same as rent control.
Yeah.
And rent control doesn't give more people housing. It gives fewer people housing because then what happens is the landlords can't make money.
Yeah.
So they don't rent. You know, it's like this creates slum housing.
Well, we are the hottest real estate market supposedly in the country is Central Ohio because of all these businesses.
Or rents will go up, I guess, is the other thing that happens because it costs more to get people out.
The same city council is also jumping into a role as a developer for new apartment buildings.
Well, look, I know about this personally. There are grants out there to go buy buildings like the one we're in and take it down and put housing.
Yeah.
So millions of dollars. A developer could buy this building with government money and build housing on it to make money themselves.
Right. In the hottest real estate market, you would think the private sector could do that.
You say that because my response to this was, well, look, if I had X number of dollars or the value of this building to go invest somewhere, would it be in 5 or 6 floors of residential at this address? And no, hell no, it would not be.
No.
Not in a million years because there's not enough money to be made doing it unless the government gives you $2 million to take it down.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, but eventually, so you build it, nobody rents it.
Yeah.
And it's empty and the developers are there. Where are they going? They're going to walk away. They don't care. They'll default. They'll walk away. Right. That'll be that.
I think you're right. Apparently, the rate of unused commercial space in Columbus is 20%.
Mm.
Like people just went home during COVID and worked out of their houses, and they're not coming back.
Yep.
And companies have figured out, I'll just pay Mary to work in her kitchen.
Yep.
She doesn't need. We don't need to rent real estate down here in the expensive downtown. So a lot of telecommuting going on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do some good and bad, and then we'll get out.
You want to go first? Or
you go first.
Okay. So my outrage of the week. So, the stock market came back. Inflation is down to a 40-year low on the rate of inflation. A 40-year low came out yesterday. And I'm very frustrated with the American people and their lack of patience with the tariffs, with trying to restructure back to more of an open marketplace economy, despite the drug discussion we had. And I just think, you know, if Americans don't have 30 days of patience before they start demanding, I want my Chinese-made toys that are made by a slave state where they do organ harvesting, where they do genocide, where they build military islands, out in the Pacific Ocean, and all kinds of other horrors. It harkens back to, you know, the criticism that people had before World War II of America, revisionists looking back, say, well, where was Roosevelt? Where were the American people on the horrors inflicted on Jews in Germany during the 30s and 40s? Well, I would say to America right now, where in the hell are you with regards to the Uyghurs, the Falun Gong, the Christians, the other people that are being subjugated in communist China? You don't give a damn. All you want is your cheap shit brought over here on a boat from China because it costs you a nickel more down at Walmart. So I'm really outraged, and I think we're a nation of pussies. And I just think that the consumerism in America has overcome our concern for human rights, and I'm mad about it. So that's my outrage. I won't even do a winner because I took too much.
Gotcha. No, I think a good thing, bipartisan bill in Ohio to help Ohioans pay off their medical debt, but not eliminate it. I think that's good. We don't choose cancer, that sort of thing, and bills can pile up. So it's just kind of help pay. I think it could be good. We'll see. I don't know. But at least it's in the right start. Outrage. There's a bill allowing Ohioans to play virtual poker and casino games online. It's like, God, do we need more of this? The quote is under the guise of, well, it'll be good. A Republican, Ohio Republican, quoting disingenuously, well, it's great for education. I'm thinking,
the lottery fix.
Exactly. Yeah. We need more gambling to help our ills. Help raise money. But anyway, so
I don't have anything good or bad this week, guys. I guess the good is Pete's going to get in the Hall of Fame sooner or later. He'll get in the Hall of Fame.
That's a good thing.
And I guess my outrage, if I have one, and maybe it's a retort partially to Norm. I don't think the problem is not the American people. The problem is the American media. And the people are influenced by the media a lot. And,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And the other problem was, as I've said about the tariffs all along, is not necessarily what he's trying to do, but what he's not, his sporadic messaging about it, I think, caused a lot of turmoil.
I think your favorite word was bombastic.
Well, no, he was a little bit bombastic about it, but the message wasn't clear where we were going with it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably also true that where we ended up with it is not necessarily where he started with it. That maybe is my hat tip to Trump for saying, look,
that's right.
You realize this wasn't going really well for you politically or the country economically, so now you're cutting deals that I think are going to be favorable.
Well, you can
get to the same place you were trying to get without doing what you set out to do.
Well, you can look at it that way. I don't think he ever thought 145% tariff was anything that he was going to hold to. It was what Scott Bessent, Secretary of the Treasury, has called strategic uncertainty, and it goes to the madman theory of the presidency.
That's right.
And
that's how he operates.
Henry Kissinger was also an adherent of the madman theory, that if the other party on the negotiating table doesn't know how crazy or sane you are, and they're not sure who they're dealing with.
It's a negotiating tactic.
Dude, and I think that's part of this.
We respond to markets like that too, and he's got to watch out, not only for the guy he's negotiating with, but for us.
Well, the Standard & Poor's is now it is at the year's high. So all of the stock market loss that happened has now been reversed, plus some.
Yep. All right. Well, look, that is your weekly dose of common sense coming at you right from the middle. This is Common Sense Ohio. Until next week.